Here's a little bit of Ed Bradley on 60 Minutes talking to Kinda Sleazy Rice.
To apologize to the families of those who were killed in the attacks.
Your government failed you. How did you feel when he made that apology?
Well, I don't think that there is anyone who is not sorry for the terrible loss that these families endured.
Listen to Kinda Sleazy Rice lie. The first thing they thought when those planes hit the World Trade Centers is, oh, goody, this fits into our plans to invade Iraq. They said less than 5 hours after the towers fell, Rumsfeld was working on plans. 5 hours. Gandhi talked about, oh, anyone with any kind of heart has to feel for the... Yeah, the first thing you thought of was more oil. Gandhi, would it just kill you to say, I'm sorry, this happened on our watch, and we're redoubling our efforts to be sure it doesn't happen again? The fact is, it happened on your watch, and all the blame you want to throw at Clinton, bottom line, it happened on your watch. When you run into the iceberg, you don't say, excuse me, but the last captain of this ship is at fault. No, you hit the iceberg. It's your responsibility. You should apologize for it, but you can't because you're too smug in your own greatness that you wouldn't dare stoop to apologize to the little people.
But my question is, how did his apology make you feel? Did you think he was grandstanding? Did you think it was sincere?
I'm not going to question what Dick Clark was or was not feeling. I think, from my point of view, the families need to know that everybody understands the deep loss.
No, the families need to know that as soon as this president saw a chance to steal hundreds of billions of dollars, he took it with glee. 9/11 is the best thing that's ever happened to George Bush. They saw their opportunity and they took it. And they didn't care about the 3,000 dead, and they didn't care about sending another 630 to their death. That oil was the only thing that mattered. And they said 100 times, probably hundreds of times, Saddam, 9/11, Saddam, 9/11. And then later they had to say, well, we never said anything about Saddam and 9/11. Nah, what a lying pack of wolves this is.
Will the families of those people who were killed hear an apology from you? Do you think that would be appropriate?
The families, I think, have heard from this president that, and from me, how deeply sorry everyone is for the loss that they endured.
There she goes again. Remember, this is the lady that had the giant super tanker named Condoleezza Rice. She lives and breathes oil just like her bosses. They're trying to, oh, we feel your pain, but it was the greatest thing. It was the biggest gift they could ever get. They got a blank check. You give a criminal a blank check, and he's going to write a lot of zeros on it, and that's exactly what Bush and his gang of thugs did. As soon as 9/11 hit, that check just fell right into their lap. How many hundreds of zeros would you like on this, Mr. Bush? Oh, a whole bunch of them. And that's what happened. They've done a decent job of containing their glee, but look at the facts. Hundreds of billions of dollars. Have you seen one drop of oil accounted for? No, you haven't. They can't account for it. They won't account for it. They don't have to because they're the only military there is. And if you don't like it, come up with a bigger military and kick their ass. But since there is no bigger military, they're the big kid on the block. They're the bully in the schoolyard. They're going to take whatever they want, and nobody can stop them. And she's trying to, oh, what a tragic day that was. Yeah, the tragic day that the greedy sons of bitches got a blank check. We're not buying it, Condi. Not for a second.
The best thing that we can do for the memory of the victims, the best thing that we can do for the future of this country, is to focus on those who did this to us.
If that's true, why was your first reaction to attack a country that had nothing to do with it? You liar. You've been lying from the start. You're going to lie Thursday when you're in front of Congress under oath. This has been one big giant lie from the beginning. Jesus, just the laundry contract that Halliburton is doing is worth hundreds of millions of dollars. The food contract was, what, $2 billion a month? They're stealing so much. The Treasury is already emptied. Halliburton's getting blank checks off a black budget that Bush is keeping the numbers to himself. We have no idea what the war is costing, and we're not going to know until after the election. Check that out. After the election, we're going to find out, oh, the war cost us $2 trillion, so there is no more Social Security, there is no more Medicare. You think this gang wouldn't try to pull that off? It's coming, it's clear as it can be. When have I been wrong? Tell me when I've been wrong. When did I predict that they were going to do something and it didn't happen, it didn't pan out? Everything. All of it. Go into back issues and find something that I said they were going to do that they ended up not doing. Trust me. This is all coming down the pike, I can see it. Why can't the smarter people see it? My good friend Tiger Woods is in a slump. Boy, I hate to hear that. Headline, only when Woods wears green are fans satisfied. And for you non-golfers, if you win the Masters, they give you a little green jacket. It's like, ooh, he's got the green jacket. But he says he gets unsolicited advice all the time. This has got to be awful. Here you are, Tiger Woods, a man some say is the best ever. And he says people all the time walking up to him in the grocery store saying, hey, dude, you need to put your feet closer together or you need to drop your shoulder a little bit. These people come up, Tiger, giving him advice. This poor guy for Woods, who says, quote, the expectations for me are different. This constitutes a slump in many eyes. So anyone with an opinion, from some grocery shopping in Florida to someone teaching amateur golfers in Wisconsin, offers advice. His last victory at the Augusta National came 2 years ago, and the last of his 8 victories in majors came 7 majors ago. Boy. Tiger in the slump. 3 weeks ago at the Bay Hill Invitational, he played 3 consecutive rounds with scores over par, something he had never done in a non-major since turning pro in 1996, and did not factor into an event he had won 4 times in a row. Did not factor. That's a good name for Tiger. Eldrick did not factor Woods is going to play golf this weekend at the Masters. Well, buddy, you got to know that I'll be sitting here. If you're still in the hunt, I'm going to watch the golf Sunday, and I'll be the guy going, hex on thee, hex on thee, hex on thee, as the ball goes into the rough. I hate to see it happen, buddy, but you just can't win them all. We rented a couple of movies the other day, Honey and the School of Rock. Mrs. Bart was a big fan of Dark Angel, so she wanted to see the Honey, and I thought, hey, Jessica Alba's going to dance around, sure, I could watch that. But I wanted to see the School of Rock, and I know it's strange, man my age, want to see a, I don't know what it was rated, but it didn't have bad language, didn't have any sex, so it was probably PG-13, be my guess. I mentioned in that comedy roundup that I hadn't seen the Jack Black movie, but now I have, and it's a pretty good movie, which is surprising. I thought he pretty much was the whole movie. His zeal for The Rock is what made the whole movie. The whole rest of the movie was just kind of normal, but he so overplayed the role that you just bought it. USA Today, greatest newspaper in my hand, asked him about some of his big influence, and he mentioned Led Zeppelin. But he said the, quote, gods of rock, he puts in the category of bands who don't really pull it off live like they do on the album. Jack, you're not showing a lot of intelligence there, buddy. It depends on what kind of canvas you're working with. You know, an album back then was 40 minutes long, so you were stuck with that. They couldn't be putting out triple albums every album with these long extended solos that you would enjoy live, but maybe not necessarily in your living room. The whole purpose of an LP was to put out, you had to make the song shorter. You just had to. Live, sometimes their days are confused or no quarter could go a half hour, and they would go off on these journeys where you know, you either like it or you don't. But, geez, how do you slap a band for not playing it the same way live as they did on the record? Because at a concert, you know, they would play sometimes 4 hours. How many albums? What, an album is 40 minutes? My good math. 4 hours is 2. That's 6 albums they give you live. And so, of course, they're not going to come out and play a 4-minute version of something. They're going to play the 10-minute, the 12, the 15, the 30-minute version of something. That was part of the experience. That's why a lot of bands, you know, come out and they play their 15 minutes and they go home. But Zeppelin would do like 3-hour minimum and 4 if they were having a good time. And the only time they took a break, they would take individual breaks. I thought that was kind of ingenious. When they did No Quarter, John Paul Jones would play the keyboards and the other 3 could go backstage, use the restroom, have a drink, smoke one. Then they come back out, and then John Bonham do a solo, so the other 3 could rest. And then later, Jimmy Page would do a solo, and the other 3 could rest. That was just a smart way to handle it, to where there was always something on stage. None of this, we're going to play for an hour and take a half-hour intermission and then play for another hour and go home. No, that's not how they did it. But, Jack, I don't know, you might not be old enough to have seen Zeppelin live. Hell, they broke up 24 years ago, and you look to be about 30-something, so, yeah, maybe you were 6, 7 years old. But, Jack, I don't think you know what you're talking about. You do not slime the lead, especially on the live playing. Boy, anyone that bought that Zeppelin DVD, if you don't think that's good playing, you are not to be in rock. We also saw Honey. There comes a time in the film, some guy sees her dancing, one of those sleazy music producers, you know, sees her dancing in the club, and says, hey, I'm a big-time video guy, you ought to come work for me. So she zooms up the ladder real quick. You know, first she's a dancer, and then one day the director doesn't show up or whatever, and so Honey takes over, and she starts directing the videos. Now she's working with the big guys. And then, as you know how it's going to go, the big movie producer, he tries to get in her pants. He's drunk at a party, and he's telling her, hey, lady, you're either with me or without me. Sound a lot like Bush. She said, go to hell. I don't need you. So she goes back to her little hole in the wall where she's helping the kids. Of course, she's altruistic. Got a dance club for the neighborhood. Gangsta gonna bees. So then Missy Elliott says, no, I want Honey on my video, damn it. Go get Honey, or I'm not working with you. So he comes back, oh, I'm sorry. And she said, that ain't going to get it. He said, I'll pay you real big. And she said, uh-uh. And the whole time she's trying to come up with, seems like it's $150,000 to buy a building so she can have her dance studio. So this guy offers her big bucks. She says, no. I'm thinking, idiot. What I would do in that situation, get out of contract and we'll sign up for 3 rounds of videos, and you give me the $150,000, we're done. But no, she had too much integrity for that. So she just told the guy to F off. And so she put on a little show, and the banker, oh, here's where it got nutty. The banker showed up and said, oh, you kids are great. I'll loan you the money. Or, no, I'll do a fundraiser. And all the rich banking friends came in because, you know, it's important that the gangsta gunnabies be fully funded. So Honey turned out to be not a good movie, but nothing to really complain about. School of Rock turned out to be quite a bit better, except Jack Black, don't know his lead.